coming up on KUCB News. Unalaska is in the market for a new finance director, and Governor Mike Dunleavy plans to cut Alaska's budget by more than $1.5 billion. Stay tuned.
Programming on KUCB is made possible by Redfish Electronics, now providing new, used, and refurbished computers, tablets, iPods, MP3s, phones, phone accessories, and flat screens. We also carry external hard drives for your digital storage needs. Redfish Electronics is located in the airport parking lot next to Northport Rentals. Redfish Electronics can be reached at 359-2205.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. I'm Zoe Sobel with some local news on Tuesday, February 12, 2019. Unalaska's finance director is leaving the city March 1st. Clay Darnell sat down with KUCB's Laura Craigle to discuss his resignation.
Darnell has spent about a year and a half as head of Unalaska's finance department. Now he says he's leaving to take a new job back in his home state.
I have accepted a position in Oklahoma as the controller of the Muscogee Creek Nation.
Darnell declined to answer questions about why he started looking for new opportunities. He says he'll do the same kind of financial work for the Muscogee tribe as he currently does for the city of Unalaska. Before he leaves, Darnell is focused on finalizing the city's budget proposal for fiscal year 2020.
The city was in good shape financially when I came, and they are also in good shape as I leave.
Darnell says he's grateful for his time in Unalaska and has a long list of people to thank.
How long do I have?
Take your time. Tell me.
Okay, I want to thank the community of Unalaska because they were so welcoming when I came, and also want to thank the finance staff. It's a group of dedicated, hardworking individuals that I work with every day, and I'm really going to miss them. The director group has been great to work with, and also I appreciated the professional and courteous treatment I got when I was before the city council members.
When Darnell submitted his letter of resignation on January 28th, he became the second city department director to resign over the course of 4 days. Jennifer Shockley had previously resigned as acting police chief, with her last day set for February 24th. City manager Thomas E. Thomas has not responded to KUCB's request for comment on the staffing changes underway at City Hall. In Unalaska, I'm Laura Craigle.
The Unalaska City Council meets tonight. At their regular session, councilors are scheduled to hear updates on the library expansion and the Captain's Bay Road project. They'll also hear a private wind energy proposal from local contractor Bill Scheisnikoff and former city engineer Keith Pedwell. The City Council meets tonight at 6 o'clock at City Hall. The House stalemate continued Tuesday. Republican House members accused Representative Gary Knopp of going back on his word after he voted against Representative Dave Tallarico to be Speaker. Knopp said he had committed to voting for a Republican, but he didn't say which one. He then voted for himself to be Speaker. The votes for Tallarico and Knopp both tied at 20 to 20. 21 votes are needed to become Speaker. The House hasn't begun its official legislative work in the first 29 days of the session. House rules require that a speaker must be elected first. Governor Mike Dunleavy will propose a budget tomorrow morning that could include more than $1.5 billion in reductions to state government spending. KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman spoke with Dunleavy about his approach to the budget.
Governor Dunleavy says he built the budget from the ground up, and with more information than he had when he was campaigning. For example, at a Juneau Chamber of Commerce debate in September, Dunleavy said he would seek $400 to $500 million in cuts, much lower than the amount he'll propose.
I had no access at that time to the inside workings of government. I was not part of the administration. Now that we see where we're at, we understand where our revenues are at, we're going to put together a responsible budget that have expenditures not exceeding revenues. And I think that's what people wanted when I was running for office.
Dunleavy is a Republican who's been watching this session as the mostly Republican House of Representatives has been unable to pick a speaker. Some House members have said the budget could provide pressure for them to get going. Dunleavy says they should listen to those who elected them.
There's folks that joined the Republican Party. They ran as Republicans. They ran on a platform. They got elected by their constituents. I believe that their constituents are going to want to hold them to their campaign promises.
Dunleavy would like to see the legislature vote for constitutional amendments that would require public votes for any changes to taxes, permanent fund dividends, or spending increases. He hasn't proposed a similar public vote on spending cuts, and he says there isn't time to do that with this budget.
These are the cards that were handed to us at this point in history. We're going to once again get the budget we believe contained and then go to the people of Alaska. It's a function of time and where you are at this point in the budgetary process.
While Dunleavy's budget would put money back into the economy by raising dividends by nearly $1 billion, the net effect will be to drain money from the state's economy. But he says what he calls a, quote, fiscal disruption is necessary in order to avoid further reductions in state savings.
I believe that the sooner we get out of this fiscal mess, the better it will be for the economy. We just seem to be putting off the inevitable. Everyone I've spoke to, there hasn't been one individual, it doesn't matter what political persuasion they are, where they live in the state of Alaska, or what their employment is. This includes state workers. They know we have to solve this issue.
It's unclear what type of reception Dunleavy's budget is going to receive from state lawmakers. Senator Bill Willikowski, a Democrat from Anchorage, says reducing state spending by $1.6 billion would be a huge hit to the economy. He's among those who would have liked to have heard more from Dunleavy about the scale of the cuts during the campaign.
People are just sort of wandering around, you know, questioning, where can you possibly cut $1.6 billion? I think that would have been really a focal point of any election. And absolutely, I think it should have been discussed.
Willikowski says he thinks the cuts will deepen the state's recession.
Let's get the public more involved, because I think the public is not going to want to see education cuts, for example. I think the public, given the opportunity, would say, we're probably spending too much on oil tax credits. We're probably not taxing the oil industry enough.
To those who would like to see a balanced budget that includes contributions from other sources than simply state spending, Dunleavy has ruled out taxes or PFD cuts. And he says the state must stop drawing down its savings.
We had $14 billion, not $14 or $14 million, $14 billion disappear as a result of deficit spending. And I would say at that rate, there's no amount of tax or PFD that can keep up with expenditures or growth at that rate.
Dunleavy says he agrees with Education Commissioner Michael Johnson that it's time for the state to review the formula that funds public schools. But he wouldn't say whether his budget includes a change to the formula. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
Eureka musher Brent Sass has won his second 1,000-mile Yukon Quest International Sled Dog Race, crossing the Fairbanks finish line yesterday with all 14 of his dogs. Sass first won the race in 2015, and with yesterday's victory, he is only the 7th competitor to win the race for a second time. Sass took off the last year after scratching midway through the 2018 Kuskokwim 300. Here to discuss his win is KUCB mushing enthusiast Laura Kregel. Hi, Laura.
Hi, Zoe. Thanks for having me on. I'm not a mushing expert, but very much a big fan.
So, okay, knowing that, tell me a little bit about this performance. Was Sass's victory a surprise?
I don't know that it was a shock or anything. Like you said, he had won before. He is a competitive musher, but he had taken off from 1,000-mile races last year. He actually spoke to him during the Cusco. I was out to help cover that race for their radio station in Bethel. And he was just saying that he was like really focusing on kind of building up his team. He didn't want the kind of competitive frenzy that sometimes surrounds those 1,000-mile races like the Quest and the Iditarod. But the year before that, he had scratched out of the Quest. So even though he has been this very competitive musher, he has won the Yukon Quest, it was by no means a given that he was going to be a winner this year or even necessarily like a very top finisher. So I wouldn't say a shock, but it's big news.
And so based on his recent win yesterday, what do you think of his team and the potential for more victories?
I think he's really established himself as somebody to watch, which he already had been, but it's another level now, because I think for a couple different reasons, you know, he was running a team of mostly rookies. These are not, you know, he had a team of 14 dogs, which I'll come back to in a second, but he is running this team. A couple dogs had finished the Quest in 2015 with him, but most of them were young dogs, had not run 1,000 miles, and he's able to put together a really successful run, a winning run with a team of dogs that are largely untested. So that is a big deal. It shows the dogs are good. It shows that he can lead them and they can pull off with a kind of an inexperienced team. Another thing is that this race was really neck and neck for most of the run. You know, it's 1,000 miles, and for most of those 1,000 miles, you know, Brent Sass is in there kind of in the mix with Alan Moore, who won last year, who's won several times before then, a very competitive musher. They're kind of neck and neck. Right there with them is Hans Gott, who has, you know, definitely won before, is a very good musher. And also in that mix, there was Michelle Phillips for quite some time, a very experienced veteran musher herself. So it was by no means an, you know, like a lacking field. It was very competitive. It was very close for a long time. And then Brent Sass's team was able to make this really big run out of Circle. This checkpoint, it's like into the mountains, huge elevation gain. So these rookie dogs come out of, you know, not a lot of experience and a tight field and push kind of at the end, you know, so they're able to close. It was a bold strategy and it really paid off. So that was also very notable. And then also I had mentioned the 14 dogs. It is not common to finish with, you know, the maximum number of dogs. He started with 14. He ran 1,000 miles with 14. And, you know, last year, Alan Moore did that. But as far as anybody knows or can remember, that was the first time. This is the second time in the race's history. Especially with rookie dogs, you expect to have to drop a couple, leave them behind if they're just getting tired, if they, you know, tweak an ankle. It's not, you know, you're expected to drop dogs, and here he finishes with a full team. So I think for all of these various reasons, he really kind of set himself up to look like a real threat for the rest of the season.
And so I think the big question on a lot of people's minds is, do you think he can win the Iditarod?
I think that's a crazy and interesting question to consider, because you talk to mushers who have run both, you talk to vets who work on both, you talk to people who live in those different areas where those races are run, and they're intriguingly different races. They're both 1,000-mile races, but they're covering different kinds of terrain. The mushers encounter different kinds of weather challenges. Different mushers are attracted to these two different races for a variety of reasons. And so just because you've had success in one doesn't mean you're going to be successful in the other. But they're both really hard races. So being successful at one should mean that you are able to take on one with a lot of guts and experience too. So it's a hard question to answer. And I think this year's Iditarod is going to continue to be kind of an interesting mix like it was last year, because Dallas Seavey, four-time champion, is not running again. He's, you know, choosing to go run the Finnmark Slopa abroad. So that's going to kind of open up an interesting dynamic. Last year, Norwegian musher Jor Olsen won for his very first race. Nick Petit came in, was the second place winner. They were an interesting kind of pairing that had never been seen at the top of the pack quite that far before, after, you know, a lot of dominance by the Seavey family. Mitch Seavey is definitely very much still in the mix. He's expected to run and be very good. Ali Zirkel, you know, Pete Kaiser, people who are great mushers. So Brent Sass has put together, you know, quite an impressive resume this season, now coming off this Yukon Quest win. But what's going to happen in Iditarod, I don't know. And it's a very short turnaround. You know, he just finished the race yesterday, and Iditarod is, you know, in March. It's not a long turnaround for, you know, mental recovery, for the dogs to rest up. But on the other hand, they're kind of, you know, they're tuned up. They just did this big thing, and everyone else is maybe coming off of just training, whereas these dogs are in the mindset. So I don't know that I would pick him, but I would not count him out from being a very competitive racer.
Well, Laura, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you so much for having me. This was fun.
That was KUCB's mushing enthusiast, Laura Craigle. She'll be back with some more insight as the sled dog season continues. And that's the news from Unalaska. I'm Zoe Sobel. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at kucb.org. Please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecast. ¶¶